You're listening to the Screaming Pods Network.
Welcome to this episode of Just the Discs. My name is Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. I've got a very special guest joining me for the first time on the show. His name is John Cribbs. He is the co-founder and head writer of The Pink Smoke, which is a wonderful website that for the last decade has, you know, offered lots of interesting takes on lots of interesting older films. I know you're a big fan of Quintet. That we have to talk about at some point, by the way.
Oh, I could talk about Quintet all day.
We got to do a whole other show. I hope that gets a Blu-ray because I'm a big fan of that one too. And anyway, John, thank you for coming on the show. And this is really exciting because for those that don't know, I'm sure that you do, Pure Cinema has joined forces with The Pink Smoke and we are now headquartered there. That show is. So you can definitely check out all our episodes over there. And Elric and I's tastes align very well with the kind of writing that happens at the Pink Smoke, so I highly recommend checking out the site in general. But anyway, this is exciting to actually be talking to you, John, because we haven't spoken on any audio format yet to this date.
I'm very excited, Brian. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I've been listening to it since its inception. I've been reading Rupert Pupkin for years. Huge fan, and it's an honor to be here.
Flattering. Very flattering. I appreciate it, sir. Well, I was excited that Matinee was coming to Blu-ray. Certainly one thing that comes up on The Pink Smoke and comes up on Pure Cinema and on Rupert Pupkin Speaks is how much I love Joe Dante. I have been a fan of his for a really long time. I have interviewed him twice. Myself once in person for a magazine in about 2010, and then I think a year or two after that I did a phone interview with him also for a podcast, and he was incredibly gracious, as you would expect, and quite intimidating, as you might also expect, because he just knows everything about movies. I'm sure that's one of the things you admire about him too.
Of course, yeah, he's an amazing talker. He's one of those filmmakers who his love of films, I mean, obviously it's on the screen, it's in his films, it's in his blood, but you get that extra sense of it anytime he does an interview or, gives a talk or
Trailers from Hell, any of these trailers are amazing.
Yeah. Amazing project there, and just everything about it is, you just feel like you learn something new and you're enriched every time. So
I had heard you and Christopher Funderburg, your co-founder of The Pink Smoke, on many episodes of Wrong Reel, but definitely the Dante episode they did. And that was one of the reasons I got the idea to talk to you about Matinee. Now, you're a huge Dante fan. Was there something about you trying to collect everything he's ever done?
Yeah, I think when I got my own apartment for the first time in college and kind of went from, just buying movies here and there, films I liked, to being like, oh, I've got space now. Like, I can fill shelves with things. What am I going to do? And one of my very first thoughts was, I want to own every single Joe Dante movie.
Nice.
And that became like the first, like, obsessive, completest mission of mine. So I just love the man's work, and it's just someone who translates through, I think, every course of your life. He's very accessible when you're just young and you're kind of into adventure, sci-fi, Spielberg stuff. And then there's another level that you can appreciate when you learn more about films and kind of understand, like we said, that history that's just inside of him and that he can bring out. I think it's just something that you can love about him no matter how old you are. And it's just something that kind of stays with you. And I think that's why he has that kind of staying power with me, at least.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. For me, The Burbs is still my favorite, which I have told him in person and otherwise. And I think he's still a little baffled by that, but I just adore that movie. But I think Matinee is probably my number two. I don't know how high it ranks for you in his pantheon.
Oh, high. I think that streak of films, Burbs, Gremlins 2, and Matinee,
amazing,
coming kind of in the middle of his career and kind of just being sort of the stabilizer right in the center of everything. And that really is, where you get like the essence of Joe Dante, I think, with The Burbs, which is my favorite too, one of my all-time favorite movies, absolutely. It's just such a fun and wonderfully structured film that you can watch a million times and it never gets old.
Oh.
And then when he did Gremlins 2, it was like, you know, just everything Joe Dante ever wanted to put in a movie, you get in that film, he just goes... just goes apeshit. And, you know, leading up to that, you just get everything you could ever want in that film. And Matinee is the logical next step where it's he's coming around full circle to his appreciation of the old B-movies from the 50s and 60s and celebration of a filmmaker, a William Castle-esque filmmaker.
Yes, the atomic bomb is terrible. But more terrible still are the effects of atomic mutation. Hello, I'm Lawrence Woolsey. And I want to warn you about something that could happen. Something that does happen in my newest motion picture. Observe the ant, a miniature marvel of social cooperation and prodigious strength. But if a man and an ant were exposed to radiation simultaneously, the result would be terrible indeed. For the result would be Mant. I feel I should warn you. The story of Matt is based on scientific fact, on theories that have appeared in national magazines. Yes, these terrible events could happen in your town, in your home, and they will happen in this theater, in Atomovision, the new motion picture miracle that puts you in the action.
Lawrence Woolsey, the master of movie horror.
Do you want to just summarize the movie in your own sort of estimation?
Sure. So Matinee basically revolves around a fictional film called Mant, Half Man, Half Ant, which is going to be, I'm not sure if it's making its premiere, but it's coming down for a special screening in Florida right at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis. So while you have everyone concerned about these possible nuclear attacks coming from Cuba, he's premiering this movie where nuclear power has turned a man into a giant insect. And of course, that's Lawrence Woolsey is the name of the producer, played by, outstandingly played by John Goodman. Just perfect casting.
I didn't think anybody recognized her. What, do you spend your whole life sitting in monster movies?
A lot, yeah. Somebody like Herb or Vincent Price or someone. It's like they're my friends.
That's a strange group. What are your real friends like?
I don't have too many. My dad's in the Navy, so we move all the time.
Oh, man. 500 new kids a year? That's scary. I remember the one time we moved. Now, this was to the big town, Hatfield, Missouri. I was petrified of those guys.
Really?
Oh, yeah. But see, now I get my revenge. I get to scare everybody else, but it's for their own good. See, people who go like this at the scary parts, they're not getting the whole benefit. You got to keep your eyes open.
What's the benefit?
Okay, like a zillion years ago, a guy's living in a cave. He goes out one day, bam, he gets chased by a mammoth. Now he's scared to death, but he gets away. And when it's all over with, he feels great.
Well, yeah, because he's still living.
Yeah, but he knows he is, and he feels it. So he goes home. Back to the cave. First thing he does a drawing of the mammoth. And he thinks, people are coming to see this. Let's make it good. Let's make the teeth real long and the eyes real mean. Boom. The first monster movie. That's probably why I still do it. Make the teeth as big as you want. Then you kill it off, everything's okay, the lights come up. You see, the people come into your cave with a 200-year-old carpet. The guy tears your ticket in half. It's too late to turn back now. Water fountain's all booby-trapped and ready. The stuff laid out on the candy counter. Then you come over here to where it's dark. It could be anything in there. And you say, here I am. What have you got for me?
One of his best.
I know, and I remember this came out. I missed this in the theater because I was overseas at the time, and we were lucky if we got an American movie 6 months out of when it originally came out. But I remember seeing a promotional thing for it on TV and being really relieved because Goodman was like a big star, but he had done King Ralph and The Babe and a bunch of movies. Yeah, so I really wanted to see, like, when is he going to get like his big starring role that's going to like just like be a perfect part for him. So I remember seeing this promotional thing and realizing he's going to work with Joe Dante and just being so excited. And, you know, sure enough for me, I think, you know, it was just a match made in heaven.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's such a confluence of so much. I mean, as much as Gremlins 2 is really like the ultimate Joe Dante movie, like you said, Matinee is also a confluence of a lot of Joe Dante stuff, including it being probably one of his most personal films, despite not having written the script himself.
The background of the story is the Cuban Missile Crisis. And it's actually a fairly personal movie for me because I was the age of the kids in the movie in 1962 on that fateful weekend that we literally thought there was going to be no school on Monday and no school ever again because the world was going to end.
Okay, people, this may not be a drill. Single file, quickly. You assume the duck and cover position with your head down and no talking. Single file, let's move.
I can't stress enough how much you probably can't conceive of what it's like to actually think that the world is going to end, but it was very heavy.
I know he's the same age as the boys in the film, and he had a younger brother. You know, he was around and going to movies in 1962 when this movie came out.
The character that Simon Fenton plays, who's the lead in the picture, is very much like me in that he moves around a lot, which I did because my father was a golf pro. His father is in the Navy. And I had a little brother just about the same age as the kid who plays his little brother in the movie. So the one thing I didn't have that they had was I didn't have any horror movie filmmakers coming to my neighborhood to plug their new movie, which was very sad. And I didn't live in Key West. I lived in New Jersey. But nonetheless, everything else about the movie is pretty autobiographical.
I knew it.
It is one of my most personal movies. I don't know that necessarily on its face makes it better than the other movies, but it does have a certain amount of heart in it. And a lot of affection for movies, which I think has communicated itself over the years to various audiences.
And was very aware of the Cuban Missile Crisis, just general duck and cover kind of hysteria. And so it combines that personal side of him and the love of William Castle and the old monster movie stuff.
The major radiation movies of the period were them and Tarantula, and The Amazing Colossal Man, and The Incredible Shrinking Man. I mean, that was the Atomic Fear era. And those movies were all telling us that there was this atomic power was not quite what it was being sold to us as, and that there was a lot of stuff to think about atomic power, that it wasn't entirely our friend the atom all the time.
Yeah, it's a movie that I feel like he was born to make, really.
Oh, absolutely. And not only was he born to make it, but just thematically, from what his career had been leading up to in his work. Because for me, Joe Dante is always about the relationship between reality and cinema, specifically monster movies. And you couldn't get a better version of that theme than to have literally this potential nuclear crisis, you know, while there's a movie about this paranoid film about the ramifications of nuclear fallout on one person.
Yeah. No, I don't know. He's just one of those guys that I can't even, I've grown to love him even more as I've gotten older. But I mean, I think The Burbs is a real turning point for me. I remember seeing Gremlins and having it scare the shit out of me, especially that last line, "There might be a gremlin under your bed."
Yes.
Which is just one of the most evil things a studio movie could do, I think, at that time. But I think it's totally in line with his sort of devilish sense of humor, and I still love that. But yeah, I think I saw The Burbs in the theater, and there's something about that movie that like you said, the intersection of cinema and, yeah, it's just, I can't explain it, that there's a fantastical element, all the things that influence him, the cartoons and the monster movies, and he's just so uniquely his own person. I never have gotten tired of seeing what comes out of his head and comes up onto the screen. One of the things that's really neat about Matinee in particular is that at the time, I don't know if I saw it when it came out, because I was graduating from high school that year, to date myself, and I think I wasn't really going to movies that much at that time, so I might have missed it then. But when I finally got to see it, I loved it, and I was always like, well, of course Universal would let Joe Dante make this movie. It makes perfect sense. But then you sort of hear the behind the scenes on this thing, and it was really not a studio idea. And when you watch it now, I think that's part of the reason it endures, is because it was basically going to be an independently financed feature, and the independent financing kept not appearing, and then basically Universal had already fronted some money on it and basically got, not suckered, but, you know, got pulled into financing this movie that at the end of the day they had no clue how to sell, because it is such a sort of unique and interesting combination of elements. And I think that's just really neat. I don't know why, but I always thought, oh no, I'm sure that the studio went full ahead into it at the time, but when I think about it, no, of course not.
Yeah, it's really surprising. You hear the story in two different interviews in this new Blu-ray that he had this financing fallout and had to go to Universal and basically beg them to finance the entire movie. You'd think coming off of Gremlins 2, which was a hit, that he would have some kind of clout, but, you know, it's just discouraging to hear that, you know, he was still struggling then to get his projects made. I like the idea, his original idea, to take it to art house films, sort of like independent films were doing at that time, kind of rolling it out slowly.
Something like it being a Miramax movie, right?
Wasn't that exactly, yeah, to kind of follow that model. But then, you know, of course, Universal say, well, that's not our business model. We're going to have it add on, you know, 2,000 screens right away. And he thinks that that's probably why it sank, because it didn't really have a good marketing strategy behind it.
Yeah, it's tough. It is a tough movie to sell. I mean, but ultimately so satisfying. What are some of the things that stick with you about it, that you love about it?
Oh man, where to start? I mean, other than Goodman's amazing performance, the movie within a movie, Mant, which is just perfect.
You're lucky to be alive, Bill.
I wish I was dead.
How could such a thing happen, Dr. Gravel?
X-rays, Carol. A form of radiation. An ant must have bitten Bill when he was having his teeth x-rayed. I've been meaning to have the office fumigated, but I've just been too darn busy. Anyway, the ant's saliva must have gotten into Bill's bloodstream and gone straight to his brain, just as the radiation, which is measured in units called Rentgens, was released.
And that's how he became a...
Mant.
And it's funny to kind of compare it to something like Amazon Women on the Moon, which, you know, Dante was involved with, but John Landis did the main, you know, B-movie section of that. And you can see where Dante, it just comes natural to him, that he knows the right camera angles and he knows the right direction of the actors to create this incredible thing. One of the great things about the new Blu-rays, you get to see the entire thing, the whole 20 minutes that they shot for Mant, which includes a few extra little bits of Kevin McCarthy here and there, and some really nice extra things, including Dick Miller, I never realized, is in Mant. Or I should say Herb Denning.
Nice.
He's right behind Kevin McCarthy the whole time. You don't notice it in the film because, you know, it's up on the screen and you don't hear any of his lines like you do in the uncut stuff. But he's there. He's right behind him the whole time, which was like, oh, my God, that's something I never noticed before. That's great.
Oh, that's amazing.
So the recreation of that obviously is great. And also you can hear the sound effects from Them, you know, the ant calls from Them. You can hear a lot more clearly. And I know that they borrowed music from lots of different B-movies, monster movies, sprinkled throughout. So like the Burbs work print that you can see on the Arrow Blu-ray, and you can hear all of his temporary tracks that he used for that he just took from giallo films and, like, you know, exploitation movies. Just fascinating to see the kind of music selection that he does to make this, you know, seem like one of the real deal. So I love that about it. I love the characters. I think Harvey Starkweather is one of Joe Dante's funniest characters of all time.
It's like I once wrote in a poem. Destiny. It's like a crazy river where you see different people's boats
that they have going by on it. But tomorrow, tomorrow's a knife. Tomorrow's a big knife. You get it? Sort of. It's abstract, Stan.
Just such a funny, like, lost rebel character that he loves to put in his films sometimes. Just the comedy is great. Oh my God, the shook up shopping cart we should talk about.
Oh yeah. Well, let me do my real quick, just leading up to that. I went through the movie this time because of I should have mentioned at the top, this is the Shout Factory Select Blu-ray of the movie. It'll be on the title of the episode, but this particular time I got obsessed with going through the entire movie and looking at every movie poster and every movie that's mentioned. And we can talk about the shook up shopping cart, which is made up, but I'm just going to run down my list of movie posters really quick. And this is not to say that Joe Dante necessarily recommends all these movies, but I do know that there was research done as far as period accuracy to what films, for instance, posters in the movie theater, what films actually played in Key West in 62 or whenever the film is set. I know they researched that. And so all those double bills, I think they're real double bills, you know, on top of which all those movies came out at that period, which I just think is really cool. But I'm just going to run down this really quick. So the first thing you see in terms of movies in the movie, Tales of Terror and Burn Witch Burn is on the marquee for the theater when it first shows. And I don't know if that's a commentary on the Red Scare era or whatever, but could be just he likes those movies. Those are both good.
Also, nice shout out to Corman, his old mentor.
So absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I'm surprised he didn't pull Corman into this one. That's a kind of a shock, but who knows. I saw the Beast with a million eyes poster on the kids' bedroom wall, and then tons of movie theater posters. The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, Atari, Lonely Are the Brave, Six Black Horses, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, Walk on the Wild Side, The Pirates of Blood River, Panic in Year Zero, Day the Earth Caught Fire, Don't Knock the Twist, Zots. That's a William Castle movie, by the way. And I did not have Don't Knock the Twist or Zots, and I actually ordered the DVDs of those based on seeing those posters. Journey to the Seventh Planet, The Mongols, Day of the Triffids, Confessions of an Opium Eater. There's actually two of those posters. Something called We'll Bury You, which I know you tweeted to me today. The Crawling Eye, Killers from Space. And then the fake movies, the Shook Up Shopping Cart, and then there's something they don't show called The Bashful Bobcat.
Yes.
But I know what, so you've read about, there was an interview I read where he was talking about they're making fun of those ridiculous, which I saw all of when I was a kid on VHS, those ridiculous live action Disney movies that would have some object or car come to life,
right? Like, right? The Herbie movies. Exactly. That's,
yeah.
And one thing about Dante, you know, that you really appreciate, what you appreciate his appreciation of cinema, he clearly respects B movies and loves B movies. He's completely realistic about like their shortcomings and how silly and goofy they are without being ironic or condescending in any way. And it's an appreciation that like helps you kind of tap into those films in a different way. And I think including these like faux live action Disney movies really makes you appreciate too, like, he knows his shit. He's not going to be like, well, here's something that sucks. You know, like he's clearly going to identify something that is artless and has no cinematic value whatsoever. Like a Haley Mills Disney movie. And
I used to have such a crush on her.
Sure. But I mean, certainly there are exceptions to the rule. I think Hot Lead and Cold Feet is a phenomenal movie myself.
Oh, I
grew
love
up
that
with
one.
That one. Yeah.
Love it.
There are exceptions, but for the most part, you know, it's easy to be cynical about those things. And it was really exciting to listen to the interview with John Hora, the cinematographer, and hear him say that they actually shot that shook up shopping cart section in CinemaScope.
Yeah.
And it looks perfect.
Yeah.
Just the colors, everything just are amazing. Plus, of course, you got Naomi Watts in an early pre-fame role.
That's right.
Which is always fun to see. And Archie Hahn in one of his best little cameo performances in a Joe Dante movie.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, speaking of that interview, we should run down real quick the special features, and then I'll ask you what were some of your favorites. But there's a lot more than what you would see on the back of the Blu-ray, for example. There's something called Master of the Matinee, Interview with Joe Dante. That's about 20 minutes. The Leading Lady, an interview with Kathy Moriarty. Mantastic, The Making of Mant. Out of the Bunker, an interview with Lisa Jacoub. I'm not sure if I'm saying her name right. Making a Monster Theater, an interview with production designer Stephen Legler. The Monster Mix, an interview with editor Marshall Harvey. Lights, Camera, Reunion, an interview with director of photography John Hora, you just mentioned. Then there is actually some stuff from, I think, an import Blu-ray that I had previous to this. Paranoia in Ant Vision, Joe Dante discusses the making of the film. Mant, the full-length version of the film with an intro by Dante. There's a vintage making of featurette, behind-the-scenes footage, deleted and extended scenes, theatrical trailer. Now, what were some of your favorites of the features on this disc?
Well, it was just great going from one interview to another with a lot of the artists involved in this film. I really enjoyed all of them. I liked hearing from the guy who played Bill, or the Mant, you know, talking about his experiences shooting the fake movie. The John Hora, of course, you recognize him as Ozzy from Innerspace. So as soon as he comes up on screen, you're like, hey, it's Ozzy.
Oh, wow. I forgot about that, too.
Yeah, but he's got some great... He pretty much goes through the whole movie talking about their approach to every scene, which was just wonderful to listen to. One thing that the new Dante interview brought up that I found interesting was that Ed Naha had taken a shot at the script after they had their original draft. Ed Naha was a writer for Starburst and Fangoria, and he wrote the novelization of RoboCop.
Nice.
Is how I know him. So it's kind of cool. And he's the one who brought in the idea of a horror actor coming to a small town with the movie. It's where that kind of originated from. And then, of course, when
Charlie Haas
took over the script, he changed it to a horror producer and then introduced the idea of the Cuban Missile Crisis and everything. I loved hearing about Barbara Bach, who was a graphic designer who designed all the posters, all the Mant posters, and all the stuff you see around the theater, which all looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
We don't get to see an interview with her, unfortunately, but she had also worked on Miracle Mile,
nice,
which is a great movie. So yeah, that's just a lot of stuff that I got. But obviously the highlight for me was the Mant footage. A couple of years ago, Dante came to BAM and with a retrospective, and they announced a secret screening that was going to happen right after Gremlins 2. And Chris and I went, and we were like, oh, we hope it's the raw footage of Mant. That would be amazing. It turned out to be Hell's a Poppin', which was lots of fun to watch, too.
Oh.
But they couldn't announce it because of the copyright issues. But we really wish we could have seen Mant. So now finally we can. See, it's all here. And in all of its glory, it looks great. The image looks great. And that's the perfect thing for a Joe Dante fan to be able to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everything that he shot for that movie, it just looks so good.
Yeah, no, it's about time, I got to say, for that. You know, I mean... When I did do the interviews that I did with him both times, definitely one of the times, you know, Matinee came up and it was like, when is it coming to DVD? At that time, I think it had barely gotten to DVD outside of the original Image DVD. I think Universal was doing a reissue and around the time I was interviewing him, and I was like, you know, did they talk to you? He's like, nope, you know, I have all the Mant footage. And I was like, oh no, you know. And so it's really great to finally now, probably 7 years after I had that conversation with him, or 8 years, to finally get that on this, you know, Shout Factory Select disc. I just love that, you know, this is coming out, and then The Burbs is coming out soon. Obviously, you and I both already probably have the Arrow versions of these movies, but that's not going to deter me any from getting the new version.
Of course not. I had just bought the Blu-ray that came out before the Arrow, so I get every version of The Burbs, so I will definitely be dropping money for that again, of course.
Yeah, but yeah, no, it's really exciting to see him get a little more recognition, because I really think he is, I mean, like I've said before, one of my favorite filmmakers of all time, but one of the great filmmakers of the 1980s, and then in turn sort of carried into the 90s. Like, he's still one of my favorites, and made so many great films, and sometimes I feel like people don't talk about him as much as they should. And so I just love anything that gets him more attention, basically, is my thing.
Well, I'm always shocked, you know, I mean, people who love Quentin Tarantino, for example. I'm just surprised that it never comes up how Tarantino was a next generation version of Joe Dante.
Yeah.
Not only in his film appreciation and what he does to preserve these classic films and his love of B pictures, but just the theme of having films in the movies. I mean, Dante has said, you know, his movies are all about creating worlds where movies exist. exist, where the characters like know what films are and recognize what monsters are. Just in terms of influence, I would say, like, you know, if you like Quentin Tarantino, why aren't you saying Joe Dante in the same breath?
Yeah.
You know, why isn't he as revered? I mean, obviously he's not making movies, you know, that get as big a deal as Tarantino's films do these days, but every bit as important in my book, if not more.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's always been, I've always been frustrated by that myself.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with that 100%. I mean, I guess Tarantino, and I love Tarantino, but you know, his stuff's just a little flashier. He's more of a bigger personality than Joe, and Joe is like, I mean, he's not, you know, he's a quieter guy, but like behind that quiet is a man who knows so much about movies that if you ever spend any time watching interviews or go and check out all his trailers from hell. And I mean, I'm sure he does a lot of preparing for that stuff, but he's so naturalistic when he speaks about older films. I feel like he almost could knock out like 20 of those in a day without even really doing research if he wanted to. That's the kind of guy he is.
Oh, without a doubt. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And just to make another like connection to Tarantino too, just the end of this movie, I was thinking this time watching it, how he clears out the theater by making it seem like it's blowing up.
Oh, yeah. You know?
And he's saving their lives basically by using the movie. It's an interesting contrast to the end of Inglourious Basterds where Tarantino, you know, just says movies have the power to destroy, you know, it has the power to just annihilate a whole group of people in the theater. And it's just such a nice message that movies can save people. And Lawrence Woolsey has that little speech he gives earlier, that really fantastic speech where he's talking about, you know, we bring up the lights and we save them, and it totally foreshadows that ending. So yeah, I don't know, Dante is just an incredibly smart and incredibly funny filmmaker, and it's just his, you'll just constantly get rewarded by seeing his films over and over again.
Absolutely. No, they're so watchable. That's a conversation my wife and I have a lot, is the difference between, for me, movies that will be favorites and movies that are good movies. But this is just a quick aside, like, she and I just watched Three Billboards last night, and we both really liked the movie, but for me, in my head, I'm like, it ain't no Joe Dante movie. It ain't something I'm gonna come back to that many times. And so there's a place for that for me. And I think the Academy Awards often get really hung up on those movies that are good one or two time watches. And they leave behind the true like legacy movies for me, where they're going to stick with you, as I think almost all Joe Dante's movies are that kind of thing. And I'd like to think that comes from him being such a movie lover himself, you know?
Oh, without a doubt. Absolutely. That resonates throughout all of his films, I think. Even though he was making, you know, films that get associated really often with the 80s, you know, films that came out in the 80s, they don't feel dated. They don't feel of their time in a negative, you know, sense. They're really universal films that endure, you know? And I think it's because he taps into this great history of film that is just going to be a perpetual thing as long as there are people who are going to the theater and still seeing these old movies and getting something out of them, and not only getting something, but like moving it forward into whatever's next, you know, kind of looking into the future. You're definitely going to get a lot out of Joe Dante's films every time you watch them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's one of my great pleasures, and I know you've had this too with your kids, is showing them movies, but showing them Joe Dante movies is actually one of my favorite things, because they tend to surprise me even more than I expect. Like, I showed my son The Burbs years ago now, and he flipped for it. You know, he flipped out. And then, you know, he even tried to show it to some of his friends, and they were just not into it in this particular case. And he was so pissed. He confided in me. He's like, man, I'm just so disappointed in my friends. They just didn't get The Burbs, man.
How can you be friends with somebody who doesn't like The Burbs? I'm with him 100%.
Yeah, he was just really bummed because he totally gets it and he totally loves it, you know. But then again, my son likes, you know, W.C. Fields and Marx Brothers. And when I showed him After Hours, he's like, I got to show my friends After Hours. I'm like, these are the same friends that bailed on The Burbs. Let's not go for that yet.
Let's hold off on that.
Yeah, but like showing my daughter Interspace, you know, last year, she flipped for that. You know, I mean, his movies are just so great for carrying on a love of cinema with your kids and making you want to show them the movies that inspired those movies. I just love any kind of a gateway drug as far as, you know, cinema goes. And Dante's movies are so laced with other cinema that they're just great to be able to branch off and show other things based on it. You know, I just love that about him.
Me too. And I can't wait to, like, finally, I'm nervous to show my kids the Joe Dantes. I don't want them to, you know, I want to show it at just the right time. And I think Inner Space would be the right one to show.
That's a good starter.
They've seen Looney Tunes, but, you know, sort of as a offshoot of watching tons and tons of Looney Tunes shorts, you know, the classic shorts. But I'm very excited, yeah, to get them into them, hopefully.
Yeah, and then Matinee coming out on Blu-ray in the States is really exciting to me because I still feel like this movie is underrated, even by Joe Dante, people that know who he is and like his films. And so, again, any opportunity to get one of his best movies out there so that people can get a look at it again or for the first time, as I think a lot of people still haven't seen it, is really exciting to me.
Absolutely. And I'm afraid when it comes to something like this for Dante, it's just hard to move past the initial, you know, the fact that it wasn't a blockbuster when it came out. You know, he's always going to remember that time working on the movie, and, you know, later appreciations, I think, maybe like fall hollow on his ears because of that. But
yeah, that's something I've definitely come to sort of wrestle with, you know, as I've gotten older. Carpenter's The Thing is probably my favorite movie of all time, and I know he doesn't feel that great about that movie because of, like, how much it hurt him that it didn't do well, you know. So it's got to be a weird thing when you're as big a fan of films and filmmakers as you and I are. It's hard not to think about a little bit of context for them, even when you're getting really excited about Big Trouble in Little China or whatever. It's, you know, if you dig deep like we do, you start to realize, oh yeah, you know, if I ever saw Carpenter or Joe Dante, you know, maybe Dante seems more open to talking about his movies and is appreciative of the love. But I've heard Carpenter in particular bristles at the talk of even certain films sometimes.
Can you believe it?
Yeah.
Like, how could you not want to talk about those films?
Yeah, I get it. You know, I mean, it's tough, but yeah, I mean, from a certain point of view, if it's your livelihood and certain films just really screwed you over, you know, and you put so much into them, It's a kind of a sad thing to me, ultimately, that might be the way that some filmmakers look at those movies. But hopefully this is just going to be something where, you know, more people, especially because filmmakers like Dante is on Twitter and things like that, I would just love to hear that people are discovering this movie and writing to him on Twitter or whatever and just saying, hey, I've been a fan of your movies since Gremlins, but I never saw this one, and it's fantastic. I showed my kids. I mean, that was another thing he mentions in the interview, is that a lot of the theaters were empty those opening weekends. But when he did go, he did see a lot of people bringing their kids, people that were old enough to have probably seen some of the kinds of movies in the 60s, the monster movies and what have you, that they wanted to share this with their children. And I think that's a really neat thing too.
Absolutely. And it's great that we have, you know, forums like Just the Disc and Pure Cinema Podcast, seriously, that remind these guys that, you know, hey, you've got longevity, you know, we're all in for the long run. We're still appreciating these films, and we will shout their praises at any chance we get.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't usually dedicate a whole show to a single movie, but I always will make an exception with a Joe Dante movie. So thank you so much, John. I really appreciate you coming on and talking to me about Matinee. And I do plan to bring you back at some point if you'll have it.
Would love to, Brian. Had a great time. I could talk about this movie for hours.
Much appreciated, sir. Everyone, go buy Matinee right now and pre-order The Burbs, because that's coming soon. Have a lovely and Blu-ray-filled week, and I will talk to you all soon. Bye-bye.
Saliva must have gotten into Bill's bloodstream and gone straight to his brain, just as the radiation, which is measured in units called Rentgens, was released.
And that's how he became a...
Mant.
Gotcha. John Goodman stars as a schlocky but charismatic 60s sci-fi film producer in Matinee, one of four new films we'll be reviewing this week on Siskel and Ebert, along with a pointed interview with Madonna that asks her the very direct question, why hasn't she been more successful in the movies. I'm Gene Siskel of the Chicago Tribune.
And I'm Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times. Our first movie is named Matinee, and this is a delightful and surprising comedy that somehow combines the Cuban Missile Crisis with young love and the sneak preview of a science fiction movie about a man who turns into a giant ant. The movie stars John Goodman as a cheerful exploitation filmmaker who specializes in gimmicks and cheap horror films. Like Alfred Hitchcock, he appears in his own coming attraction.
I feel I should warn you. The story of Matt is based on scientific fact, on theories that have appeared in national magazines. Yes, these terrible events could happen in your town, in your home.
In Key West, Florida, young Simon Fenton plays a monster movie fan who talks himself inside the theater while Goodman is setting up for his big show.
Giving it to the people right where they need it the most.
Cool.
Meanwhile, Kelly Martin has a lot of fun as the school beauty who has selected her next boyfriend.
Sherry. Hi.
Hello, Stan.
And Kathy Moriarty plays Goodman's leading lady, who doubles as a phony nurse as part of the hype for the film.
It's a release form. It says it's not our fault if the movie scares you to death.
What?
It's not a joke. We've had 10-year-old kids having heart attacks at this movie. They're recovering, but we can't be exposed legally. Now, if you don't sign...
But we're not scared. Are we, Dennis?
No. Nurse, I cut my elbow.
That looks terrible.
Matinee is hard to describe unless you understand that somehow all of these different pieces fit together into a movie that is sometimes very funny and always has a genuine charm. Goodman is good as the horror filmmaker because he goes easy on the sleaze and somehow communicates how much this character really loves making those awful movies. Matinee sounds unlikely, but it works wonderfully well, yeah. And I really enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it, too. First credit director Joe Dante, who did Gremlins, and he sort of worked always at the fringes of movie making, and this is a really good job.
Yes, here. It is.
When I watched this picture at the beginning, and as soon as I saw that it was going to be a parody of these kinds of films, mm-hmm. I had to ask myself as a critic the following question. Would it be more fun to see those old films than what I was about to see? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the answer is, this is just as good, campy, fun, it's very well written. Charlie Haas did the screenplay, and it's really smart. You mentioned Hitchcock. I think actually the pattern for this guy is Arch Obler, who did The Bubble.
Arch Obler, and also in particular William Castle, who was the guy that actually put buzzers under the seats and so forth.
Yeah.
And you know, as you watch this guy wiring this theater, and he's broke, and his creditors are coming down on him, and his girlfriend is going to leave him, and you realize that he's not just trying to steal money from the groups.
He likes
to put on a show.
Yes, and there's a praise of him as a real showman, and yes, that kind of showman
and
is
one touch that I really liked is, and I won't give away the secret, but the kid that he hires to play the aunt who runs up and down the aisles, that's a good touch.
There's a lot of good things in this movie. Matinee is the name of it. Okay.